listening to the Arsenal Ramble.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Ramble. Today we're going to be getting our teeth stuck into the big 1-0 win away against Crystal Palace. Arsenal hung on by the very skin of their teeth to take all 3 points away at Selhurst Park. Joining me as ever to discuss this one, Dom, how are you, mate?
I'm not too bad, mate, to be honest. I just want to say, is it too early for us to be getting the defibrillator out? Because I was having heart palpitations towards the end of that game, and it's only the second match in, which I don't know if that's a bad omen for the season, but, you know, 2 from 2, 6 points on the table, that's as good as we can get.
Yeah, man, as far as points are concerned, yeah, there's nothing to worry about, but they don't half just put you through it, do they? But, you know, It's a tough place to go. I know it's a bit of a cliche, Selhurst Park. It always seems to be on a Monday night as well when they absolutely pack in. Just the atmosphere seems to lift on an evening. So, you know, we had it against us. And I'm not being funny, they basically had 12 men with that ref as well. We'll get into that. But David Coote, wow. What a poor referee. But anyway, let's not talk about refs. Let's talk about the Arsenal. Let's talk about team sheets, as we always do. And I suppose the big one has got to be Big Gabby at the back, not starting again. Against Forest, it was a bit of a question mark, and everyone just seemed to assume that it was just maybe a tactical change or potentially carrying a little niggle. But now that's two Premier League games on the trot where he's not started. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so for me, if it's just going to be from the first game, then you think maybe he's just having a fitness issue and he's working his way back into the team after a tough pre-season. But it does seem like it's almost by design from Arteta that he's going with this one centre-back and then two kind of hybrid centre-backs in Ben White and Tomiyasu, what was in the previous game Timber. And I don't know if it's just Arteta trying a new formation and trying to make these overloads in midfield so that Partey can then change the shape of the team and step in. But it does definitely worry me, especially because before the game, there's been a lot of murmurs and a lot of chatter about Gabriel potentially being linked to a move away from the Arsenal. Mm-hmm. I've heard stories of both Madrid and of the Saudi League. I'm not quite sure which team in the Saudi League that were interested in him, but there's definitely been links to them. And we know that money does talk at the end of the day. So fingers crossed his head doesn't get turned, but it definitely did ring alarm bells for me.
Mm. Well, as we're speaking, actually, the big Fabrizio Romano, as we all know, has tweeted saying that Arsenal have no intention of selling Gabriel. And, you know, whilst Saudi are pushing, you know, if we don't want to sell, we don't want to sell. So maybe it's just a case of he's had his head turned slightly, and until this gets settled, he stays out of the team because we want 100% focused players on the pitch. A little bit similar to how when we were in for Caicedo in January last year, that Brighton took him out of the team momentarily until the window ended and his head got sorted a little bit. So potentially it's something along those lines. But apparently we've got no intention to sell, and I'm absolutely buzzing about that, because to lose a player of his stature would be huge. The partnership he's got with Saliba as well is colossal, and I don't think we could replace him, no matter how much money the Saudis throw at him. I don't see us being able to effectively replace him, to be honest.
No, we wouldn't be able to replace him, and certainly wouldn't be able to get someone in the last 12 days that we've got remaining of the window for an adequate price, because we're not going to... Kivior's not quite up to the level that he can fill in Gabriel's shoes just yet. And then if we were to release Gabriel to the Saudi League or to wherever, and for example, if Saliba gets injured again, like he did at the end of last season, we would be left with, well, no centre-backs of high quality. And that would put us in a really vulnerable position and make us quite, prone to conceding, which is not ideal. And the thing is as well, I don't know if it's like a vindictive thing from Arteta, if he is leaving him out for that reason. I'm sure there must be some other reason tactically, because, you know, from Arteta's point of view, he's got these players and he just wants to win. I feel like winning a match would be more important to him than proving a point. I don't know if that translates to you as well, or...
Yeah, I think so. And another element to it as well is the fact that when he isn't in the team, we're having to sort of use the left-hand side as our makeshift centre-back, i.e. Tomiyasu went in there, and then Partey then comes back as our inverted full-back. And I'm really not convinced by that one. Partey actually did do quite well defensively today, to be honest. I thought he did really well, but his passing game from that position takes a big hit. And you saw it in this game. He misplaced a whole heap of passes and almost cost us a few times. So I think when you're trying to accommodate this Gabriel out change, it does also affect the rest of the team. And I'm hoping now that Zinchenko's back fit, he obviously made a little bit of a cameo there at the end, that this may allow us to revert back to that back four that we're more familiar with Ben White and Zinchenko on either flanks.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of different elements, isn't it? There's a lot of different changes going on in the team all at once. You know, you've got the likes of Havertz coming in and Rice coming in, and then you're dropping a centre back out. You're changing the whole shape of the back four to a back three without two centre backs, and all of these, you know, different personnel plus different systems. It's going to take a bit of time. It's going to have some teething issues. But ultimately, whilst they're figuring it out, if we can keep winning games, however we can do it, then, you know, that's always a bonus. But like you say, fingers crossed, Zinchenko, who came on, he played in the behind closed doors fixture against Luton, didn't he? He featured in that game. And then he came on towards the end of this game. So that is pretty much rearing him up to get back into the starting lineup, especially with, we'll come on to it a bit later, but with Tomiyasu not being available for the following fixtures.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about Tomiyasu, let's discuss him a little bit, because in that first half, I think I messaged you or you messaged me saying that he did look a little bit suspect. I think Ayew was, he was very isolated on that side, and Ayew was exploiting that, really running at him. And I think it was around the 15th minute mark. He beat Tomiyasu before whipping in a really threatening ball into the 6-yard box, and it was causing a bit of chaos. And you know, it couldn't help but think that I just don't like to see Tomiyasu on that side. You know, I don't know what it is, but we've seen him really excel at Liverpool last season, for example, against Salah, absolutely bossed it. But there's something about Tomiyasu on that left-hand side that just doesn't seem natural to me.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree. And I think both offensively and defensively in this game, he was below par. Because, like you say, in that one-on-one situation that he had with Ayew, he just seemed a bit behind the pace of it, really, didn't he? I know Ayew is really quick, to be honest, so that could have a factor in it. But yeah, he just seemed a little bit behind the pace of the game. And even when we're trying to create chances, when we're trying to move forward, when it comes over to that left-hand side, you had Havertz, Martinelli, and then Tomiyasu was the kind of triangle linking up there. And every time the ball came to Tomiyasu, he just either took an extra touch or didn't quite play the ball into the path of Martinelli where he would want it. And you never expect him to be able to pull off one of these little reverse passes that you'd see maybe Zinchenko be able to pull, that he can do it, you know, outside the boot with his left foot or reverse it back with his right foot. And for Tomiyasu, when he was brought into the team, everyone was raving about how two-footed he is, and he's got, you know, excellent technical ability as well as defensive ability. We didn't really see either of those things, especially in the first half, did we?
No, we didn't, to be fair. I think this game was very similar to the Nottingham game, to be fair, where we just sort of seemed to control the half, but we weren't really creating clear-cut chances until maybe sort of the 30, 35-minute mark, where just sort of towards the end of the match. And I think the first one fell to Eddie Nketiah, didn't it? I think it was Saka dispossessing Schlupp, and he sort of stabbed the ball into Nketiah's path. He really did this well. He squeezed through and sort of off balance got his shot away, but it pinged off the base of the far post. And I thought he was really quite unfortunate with this one. You know, I can't fault his performance today, to be honest. Despite that miss, and we'll come on to the other big miss in a moment, but I thought he looked really threatening all game.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. And me and Dave have both got a group chat with another chap who's a Man United fan. And he said to us, he was like, Nketiah looks like he's really good on the ball, but he's not very good at finishing. And then me and Dave both replied saying, that's so strange because normally it's the opposite. Nketiah, we're all accustomed to him being a fox in the box, a poacher. He's usually so good at finishing, but he doesn't really create much. So it was kind of funny for it to be the other way around in this match. And hopefully he can knit it all together and become the perfect striker for us in the future. But yeah, he was desperately unlucky with those chances. As you say, the first one where he wriggles through, and he does really create the chance himself with his movement and his ability to open his body up. And you just sense that if that was on the other foot, because it was on his weaker left foot, it just wasn't accurate enough to nestle it into the bottom left-hand corner, unfortunately. And he was a bit off balance as well. And then, like you say, this second chance where he was played through from a absolutely superbly reversed pass from Declan Rice outside of his right foot. And he takes an extra touch here, which brings him a little bit too close to the keeper. And then he gets the little dinked shot all wrong, really goes over the bar. You feel like maybe if he's firing all cylinders, he just leathers this first time.
Yeah, that's the sort of finish that he normally just buries, doesn't he? Because it was a fairly simple finish. The ball was set up nicely as well to just absolutely hammer home. You could still dink that goal, to be fair. He just puts far too much weight on it. Especially at that close range, I think it's better to just place it. It was a shame, because those two big misses will be what's on a lot of fans' minds and sort of take the shine off his performance. Because you take those misses away, I thought he had a solid game. He was causing them all sorts of problems, and he was very athletic in terms of holding up the ball and causing a bit of chaos and just allowing other players and interchanges and just his overall game was a little bit more like what we see from Jesus, to be honest. And that's probably exactly what Arteta wants from him. I really can't knock that performance from him.
Yeah, if you want a striker to step in and perfectly emulate Gabriel Jesus, then having someone that's all-round build-up play and awful finishing is absolutely the right thing to do. I'm only saying that in jest. But yeah, we had quite a few great performers in that first half, most notably Declan Rice as well. Now, his passing ability, him spraying the ball from, you know, left and right, and the reverse passing, he looks like he's really grown into that role in the middle, doesn't he? He's making it his own.
I think this was his best performance in an Arsenal shirt. And we've been saying it for a few weeks now that he just doesn't seem quite match fit, because obviously he was a little bit behind everybody else in terms of pre-season preparations. But he seems to have caught up now. And yeah, today he really did show the world-class player that he is. His ability to pick a pass and just spray it left to right, the diagonals, you know, it really does work with our team perfectly, because what we like to do is get Martinelli and get Saka one-on-one with the fullback and let him cause chaos. And that's exactly what happens. Unfortunately for Martinelli, it wasn't his best game. I feel like I'm being really negative, you know. So apologies for that. But I have to be honest and give my opinion. But I do think that Martinelli he was just one gear behind everybody else. I know we've probably glossed over it a little bit, but in the first half, right at the start, he got a ball dished out to him in acres of space, and he just took too long on the ball, dilly-dallied too long. And by the time he got his shot off, it was an easy block. And he just wasn't as effective as we've seen in previous games in pre-season. And even against Forest, he created that first goal with that bit of magic. And we just didn't see that in this game. But as you say, Rice was just unlocking the ability to be able to do this and get our wingers one-on-one with the defender. And yeah, he's going to be massive for us this season. I think, he's really going to be the difference in some games. And I think if you take him out of this team today, we could be looking at a different scoreline, because these gritty performances, these 1-0 wins away from home, where you need big leaders like that. I think he made a difference today.
Yeah, for sure. There's quite a few times as well in the second half, especially where you saw Rice, you know, barking out the orders, and you can really tell he's got that captain's mentality. I think Odegaard gave him a bit of jip at one point because he just headed the ball to clear it away. And Odegaard kind of said, like, you know, you should keep it on the ground, try and pass it out kind of thing. And he's just saying, like, I've got no options. I'm just getting it away. You know, and when you're under the cosh, that's all he wants to do, really. And it's good that he can actually give it back. And it shows that he's got that leadership mentality just within him. And it wouldn't surprise me if within the next few seasons we actually see him make that step up to be captain. I don't think we're too far away from that. But yeah, it's interesting what you say about Martinelli and his performance. I don't think you're being harsh on him. I think it's just because of the standards that he sets in games generally. He's so dangerous and he's always threatening. And we didn't really see too much of that from him in this first half, especially. I do think we probably could have called for Trossard a little bit, you know, maybe 60 minutes in whilst Martinelli was starting to flag a little bit, but obviously we saw what unfolded after what that happened. But yeah, not his best game, didn't really create too much, and everything was going through that other side, wasn't it, through Saka and Odegaard and Ben White. But we did actually have a few warning signs as well in the first half, didn't we, where I think Jordan Ayew latched onto a ball after Saliba miscontrolled it, which is something that you don't often see from Saliba. Probably a lapse in concentration, to be honest, because we had been so dominant. And this was probably one of the biggest chances that Crystal Palace had in that first half. And credit to William Saliba, he actually gets back really quickly. And as we saw, Jordan Ayew, he is rapid. And Saliba gets back and he just, you know, his long Inspector Gadget legs reaches out and claims the ball back. And luckily, we get away with that one. But that was definitely a sign that if we had Gabriel alongside Saliba in that sort of left-sided centre-back area, he would have been able to cover for his mistake.
It was definitely another game where I felt that the only way they were going to score is if we made a big, big error, like Saliba obviously recovered well, or you know, a set piece or something of that ilk. A goal from open play just didn't seem very likely at all. But going back to the Saliba, the bit of brilliance from him there, he is just an absolute warrior, isn't he? Like, nothing was going past him in that whole game. And I think you said it, you know, throughout the game, that it felt like that little lapse in concentration, he just had to do that just so he could sort of run back and just sort of show what he could do, you know, because he just knows he can do it. He's just such an amazing defender. And I'm not going to lie, my heart was in my mouth. Whenever a player goes to ground like that for a tackle, you can't help but think the worst, can you? But it was a perfectly timed tackle. And I think he has to go up there with Declan Rice as one of the better performers today, for sure.
Yeah, it seems like in today's performance, it's a really strange mixture of overperformers and underperformers. There wasn't many players that just kind of trudged along and had an average game. I think pretty much most players. I'd say, okay, maybe Ben White, I'd say, had a pretty average game. But apart from that, everyone either overperformed or underperformed today. Another underperformer as well that I'd like to point out is probably Kai Havertz. He didn't really create anything much in the first half at all going forward. He's got some nice tidy touches on the ball, but I feel like the runs that he's making aren't direct enough. And especially in the second half when we're launching this rear guard action, trying to keep the ball and give ourselves a bit of breathing space, every time he got the ball back off them, he just wasted it, or he'd get tackled straight away, or he'd have a poor touch or something like that, and it put the pressure straight back onto us. Did you notice that as well? Or
I did, to be fair. I have to agree with that. He just has that real lackadaisical sort of vibe about him, doesn't he? That he just sort of strolls around the pitch, similar to how Ozil had, you know, where he just doesn't look like he's really trying. And you're thinking, what are you doing, mate? The game just seems to pass him by at times. But Arteta clearly sees something in him. And I trust Arteta, you know, massively. So I do believe it's just a matter of time before it clicks. And this is sort of the early sort of phase of this new team, you know. So I do think it is going to take a bit of time. But I have to agree that I'm sort of struggling to see it at the minute, because I don't see that dynamic player that we sort of need in that mold. We need someone a bit more robust, a bit more physical. I mean, he's a tall guy, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. I'm just not seeing it yet. I feel a little bit bad saying that, but I'll caveat it with I do think it will get there. It's just maybe getting the right team around him, and maybe at the minute with the Partey at right back situation, I don't think that it's quite gelling yet.
No. Like you say, we need someone a bit more robust, a bit more physical, you know, like Granit Xhaka. But unfortunately, yeah, he's gone. And it does strike me that he is getting a lot of opportunities at the start of the season because of our defensive woes, with Partey having to fill in at the right back position. I don't think we'd see as much of Havertz if, for example, Zinchenko had started, or if Timber was, you know, didn't have his ACL tear. We probably would have seen Ben White start a right back, Partey and Rice in the middle, and then Havertz would have been either on the bench or, you know, somewhere else. So he's got this opportunity now to play that position. So he really needs to step up and show that he can influence the game and actually help create chances from there, or else, you know, he's just going to fall out of favour and be wasted on the bench. So moving into the second half then, we had a few half chances. We were creating quite a lot of pressure, most of it all going down the right wing, like usual, through Saka. He was creating a few half chances, but not really anything too clinical. And then just outside of the Crystal Palace box, Saka receives the ball and he gets it on the half turn. And I absolutely love it when Saka does this, because he gets the ball to feet and then he gets a player tight to the back of him and then he spins. And you can almost just see the player trying to hold on to him as if to say, no, like, you can't spin me. And in doing that, Saka either gets away from them or they commit a foul. And in this instance, they actually committed a foul on Saka, which was then, you know, the catalyst for us scoring our first goal. So it all starts from there. Martinelli then is over the free kick. And to his credit, although he didn't have a very good game, he saw the run of Eddie Nketiah and acted really quickly, took the free kick quickly and released it to Eddie Nketiah, who gets through and he's one-on-one with Johnston, and he just nicks it round his hands for Johnston to then make contact with Eddie and catch his feet, and the referee blew for a penalty. And once you've blown for a penalty there, VAR's not going to overturn it, because he's gone round the keeper. Oh. Keeper's nowhere near the ball. He's made contact with a player. It's a pen. There was a few moments of deliberation whilst they were checking to see if Thomas Partey had impeded one of the Crystal Palace defenders, which he to be fair, my heart was in my mouth because I saw that he'd put his arms on him. But, you know, if that's the other way around, they're not given a penalty for fouling a player there. It was very minimal contact and it would have been pretty soft to try and overturn that. So luckily it wasn't given. And then our Capitan Odegaard stepped up to the plate. It wasn't Bukayo Saka. I think they've been listening to the Arsenal ramble, haven't they? Odegaard steps up to the penalty and he just slots it bottom left-hand corner, cool as you like. And yeah, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to struggle to add to that really because you said it perfectly. But my heart was in my mouth with the party situation, I'm not going to lie. Because it's one of those where if it happens to you, you're like, hang on a minute, he's blocked him off there. But then vice versa, you're saying, well, he's just stood his ground at the end of the day. I'm not sure he would have got there anyway, to be honest, because he was in absolute acres of space. I know it's easy for us to say, but watching it on TV, I was screaming at the TV saying, play it, because he was just in absolute acres. And it was such an obvious place. Palace just absolutely switched off and we capitalised. So yeah, it was a great bit of ingenuity from Martinelli to spot that, and an absolute stonewaller keeper. You know, you wouldn't want Ramsdale to be committing like that in that situation, and he made a poor error there, but we capitalised. And yeah, like you said, Arteta clearly listens to the Arsenal ramble, because we were discussing this at the end of the, I think it was the City Community Shield podcast after the penalty shootout, and we were sort of praising how well Odegaard's penalties have been all throughout pre-season. We've obviously had a few penalty shootouts throughout pre-season, and every single time his penalties look really, really good. And he takes a sort of a very unique run-up as well, and it's hard for keepers to sort of predict as they're approaching, if you know what I mean, whereas Saka is a bit more traditional. And, you know, obviously we love Saka, but his penalties have been a little bit bad in the last few that he's had, really. The West Ham one springs to mind, and even some of the ones that went in pre-season were a bit scuffy. So I think giving the penalties to Odegaard is the right decision, and he did not let us down today.
Yeah, I have to agree. And, you know, Odegaard, he's a captain at the end of the day, and he's an attacking player, so he should be able to take penalties. He should be able to step up, take responsibility, and as one of the most experienced players on that pitch, be able to deliver. And I think with him being able to do that, it takes a lot of the weight off Saka's shoulders. You know, the pressure, he's always going to have that monkey on his back about the Euros final where he missed his penalty. It's always going to go back to that. If he ever misses a penalty again, people will always draw conclusions that he's not a very good penalty taker and ignore the fact that he scored, what, 7 in a row post that tournament. But yeah, I think if there's anything that we could do without, it's a Saka that has a confidence knock. I know he would never really struggle for confidence, but if we could just put that responsibility onto somebody else, then I think that's perfectly fine. And Odegaard's a great man to take them because of how well he actually does take them. So yeah, we convert 1-0 up. We look like we're cruising. Everything, you know, we've controlled the game up to now. We've had very minimal chances come against us, and we've finally broken the deadlock. Now, this is exactly how you would picture a perfect scenario, wouldn't you? You're away from home. You've just gone 1-0 up. And unfortunately, we go and do a very Arsenal thing and throw a spanner in the works. Now, Tomiyasu, who we've talked about a little bit earlier, had a little bit of a mare. Initially, he got given his first yellow card in an instance where Kai Havertz holds onto the ball from a throw-in for about 12 seconds and then hands the ball over to Tomiyasu, which, you know, because it's just following us scoring, the Palace fans are getting on our backs and, you know, it's whipping up a frenzy. And because we've taken a little bit too long to take the throw in, then the referee cards the person taking the throw-in, who unfortunately at that moment was Tomiyasu, who had only had the ball in his hand for 8 seconds at that point, which, you know, I feel like he's been a little bit hard done by for that. But once you're on a yellow, I think you've got to be really careful, especially when players are breaking through. Now, I personally don't think Tomiyasu did too much wrong. It is on the foul that he committed on the halfway line. I think he is very minimal contact, but he does definitely impede the player. So I think maybe that's a yellow, but it's very soft and certainly something which is quite harsh to be given a red card for a second yellow. What do you think about that?
It is harsh. There's no doubt about it. This is what I was talking about at the start of the podcast with the referee performance. And I hate to bash referees because it is boring at the end of the day. Like, I don't like talking about it. I want to talk about football, not referees. But at the end of the day, that referee is so influenced by the crowd that it's just painful. Like, for example, with the free kick that resulted in the penalty for Arsenal, Ayew pulls back Saka, like you said. Goal-scoring opportunity, that's a yellow card, especially under these new rules where they're being a bit more stricter with yellow cards. And then for Tomiyasu to get a yellow card for that, basically on the halfway line, for minimal contact, and that's fair. It was minimal contact. I don't even know if you can really say that he even pulled him back. I do feel for him. And maybe he was a little bit naive to even get in that scuffle in the first place. But I just think it's incredibly harsh. And it really, you know, made us have to work for this win. And ultimately, it shouldn't have been like that at all, because it's never a red card or a double yellow. Never.
Yeah, that's it as well. And you just want to see consistency, don't you? Like, if you're going to send Tomiyasu off for a second yellow in that instance, then you should have at least been off the pitch before that, because of, you know, that what you just mentioned. So it is really frustrating, because we had this quite often last season where there were inconsistencies and referees' decisions which influenced games. And fortunately for us today, it didn't actually end up affecting the outcome of the game, but it very nearly did. It quite easily could have, because we were 10 men with 25 minutes or so left to go, which is a third of the game. So I think discipline is something we're going to have to watch out for this season, just because we didn't have a single red card of the whole of last season. And now we're two games in, we've already had one red card, and we were getting quite a few silly yellows as well towards the end of the game. I think Kai Havertz got one for kicking the ball away and also he kicked the ball away towards our goal, which if you're going to get a yellow for it, at least kick it into the stands, row Z or something. But I think maybe Arteta needs to have a word with them and say, look, guys, you can't lose your head. You need to stay focused. Can't be getting too many yellow cards, because they build up and then you get suspensions and that throws another spanner in the works. So, yeah, hopefully he can keep a lid on this.
The thing is that it's been so ingrained into most Premier League players, most football players, to slow the game down, and not to time waste, but just to slow the game down. And, you know, some would argue that is time wasting, but there's an art to it. There's an art to doing it just before it becomes time wasting. And now there seems to be a pretty big cutoff point where there's not much leniency with that slowing the game down element. And we're going to have to be really careful about trying to do that. And maybe we shouldn't even do it at all, because ultimately time is going to be added on. So what is the point? We might as well control the game and see it out to whatever minute gets added on, because in some respects it's almost showing the other team that you're a little bit nervous and you're wanting to time waste, and it puts that little bit of a little bit of spark into the opposition team, thinking, well, they're actually thinking that they're gonna have to hold on for this or whatever. You know, it's a psychological thing. But I noticed that the minute Tomiyasu went on, it was backs against the wall, time to hoof it out when it gets, you know, we weren't playing our game. And I still think with 10 men, we have the ability to do that. So I think we're going to have to be wise to it. Yeah. And I think, like you said, I think Arteta's going to need to have a word with the team and really sort this out. And another thing as well is because of this referee, I was convinced that there was going to be there was going to be another controversial call. And I think it was about 5 minutes after our penalty, Tomiyasu's red card, that Eze was twisting and turning in the box. And he sort of went down on a challenge involving Rice and Partey, I think it was. And it looked to be a little bit of contact from Partey's sort of hanging leg. But the referee did not give a penalty in this instance. VAR agreed with the on-field ref. Like you said earlier, I think if the ref had given this, I don't think VAR overturns it. So thankfully, he got that one right, in my opinion anyway. What was your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so honestly, without my Arsenal hat on, I think that this could have gone either way. I'm pretty sure if the ref had blown for that to be a penalty, then I don't think VAR is going to overturn it, and you couldn't really argue too much against it. There's definitely a hint, well, more than a hint, of Eze leaving his leg in as he goes past. He kind of skips over Partey and then he leaves his leg hanging. But, you know, once a player does that, you can't then stick your leg in to have the referee have to make a decision, kind of thing. You don't want to make it so the referee can actually give them a penalty in the first place, so you don't want to be sticking your legs in. And I think it was a coming together of two players either side of him, and we were pretty lucky in that instance for them to not be awarded a penalty. But sometimes, you know, you've just got to ride your luck in these games, and there's been more than one of those that weren't given to us last season, was there? That we've had quite a lot of in fact, even in the first half, there was an opportunity where I think Eddie Nketiah was twisting and turning and he got caught. And a similar thing, his leg was kind of dragging on the player and it wasn't given. So I don't know if that maybe balances it out in this game, but yeah.
Yeah, again, it was definitely a heart in mouth moment, wasn't it? I think you need a bit of luck sometimes away from home, and thankfully we got it there. But it was certainly a 50-50, and I think some refs give that and some don't. So thankfully, we were on the positive end of that one. But, you know, even after that, it was just relentless pressure, wasn't it? We had to really dig deep. I've got on my notes here, the 88th minute, Ayew collects Mitchell's inside ball on the turn, looks for Edouard at the near post, but Gabriel's there to hook the ball clear. We're hanging on. I think a little bit before that, we had that moment where I can't quite remember who the player was, but it was an absolute fizzing cross that seemed to, that Ben White wasn't quite switched on. It just sort of went past his head, and the glancing header flashed wide of the post. It was a bit of an onslaught, really. You know, what were you thinking at this stage?
Yeah, it was really backs against the wall at that moment. And for all of the talk about if Gabriel's head's in the clouds and if he's thinking about going to move to a different club, when he came on, he battled like an absolute warrior for every single cross. Every single time the ball got placed in behind him as well, he would usher the ball out and then he would celebrate like he's just scored a goal. Literally, he'd turn around, high five Ramsdale, you know, almost fist bumping Saliba and roaring like they just scored, even though he just ushered the ball out for a goal kick. So you certainly can't question his commitment when he came on. And I think the changes as well, bringing on Jorginho, and I think Zinchenko came on when Jorginho came on as well, just swapping them out for Nketiah, I think it made us a lot more compact, because yes, Nketiah gave us that out ball, but he looked really leggy by that point, looked absolutely shattered. And to be fair, he'd put a big shift in, so fair play to him. But You know, you saw Arteta saying, make the game more compact. Jorginho, get in there, just get more bodies defending. Kivior came on as well. And after we started the game with basically one centre-back, we finished the game with about four or five all in that position. So, you know, we really did, you know, put everything on the line for it. But that's it. When you go away from home to these really tough grounds in the Premier League, if you can come out after being 10 men down and you come out with 3 points after an onslaught for 25 minutes, then that just shows you the spirit of the team and shows you the direction that they're potentially moving into.
Yeah, it was certainly a big win. Like I said at the start of the pod, to go away to Selhurst Park is never an easy fixture. It was the opening fixture of last season, wasn't it? And it wasn't an easy game back then, even though it was a 2-0 on the day, but we had to work for that win. I'm buzzing. Does that take us to third in the Premier League? We're now joint third below City and Brighton. Got Fulham up next. So, you know, it's all looking fairly good. The only thing that's on my mind is this Timber situation that we heard about midweek. We've not really talked about this yet on the podcast, so I thought I'd bring it up a little bit. But how disappointing is that for Timber himself and for Arsenal?
It is really disappointing, to be honest, because he looked awesome, didn't he? When we saw him play in pre-season, every single time he played, he just looked like an absolute colossus of a defender. He was strong, fast, beating people to the ball, good on the ball as well, could create and get forward. But he is someone who would have been an unbelievable option to be able to have at either right back, left back, centre back, or even stepping into that midfield position. So he is a massive loss. But it's one of those things you just can't call for. You can't expect it to happen. I think he had a really good injury record when he was at Ajax, didn't he? And it's just typical. He's played two games in an Arsenal shirt and then tore his ACL, similar to like when Partey came to the Premier League after having a great injury record and then he was injured all the time. You just can't expect it sometimes. And these things happen in football. That's why you need squad depth. And luckily, we have got quite a few other left-backs who can fill into that position. Unfortunately, we're doing our best to get red cards and go down the pecking order to Zinchenko, who's only just come back. So fingers crossed he can now stay fit. But yeah, I think the Timber situation, I don't know if they said it was a complete tear of the ACL. I think it was a slight tear, so he might not need a full graft, which means it might not take as long for recovery, but you're still talking at the very minimum after Christmas, aren't you? He's not going to be coming back before then, is he?
It's very unlikely. And even if he, you know, he's declared fit enough to train, for example, you're still talking months on top of that, because it takes a long time to get back to match fitness, and also it does knock your confidence. Me and you have both done ACLs. We both know what it's like, and it does knock you mentally. It makes you think, can I trust my knee anymore? Can I do what I used to be able to do? But I think what is positive is Timber does seem to me to be like a bit of a warrior, and he's going to aim to come back stronger. We've seen, you know, modern medicine now, we've seen players come back and improve and be better than before. He's got age on his side. He's 22 years old. You know, I think if anyone's going to be able to come back stronger, it's him, after having only known him for a couple of months, really. So, yeah, it's really disappointing. And what makes it even worse as well is the fact that he was so versatile in that back line that it's like missing a right back, a left back and a centre back, isn't it? It takes a lot of options out of this team. And he seemed to be one of the first names on the team sheet for Arteta, to be honest. So I do now start to think, does this maybe mean that we may go into the transfer window and look to reinforce someone within that sort of position, because as we're saying, it's likely to be the majority, if not all, of the season.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, and I don't know if we can, if we're going to dabble into the transfer window, we can't allow for any of our players to leave either. I think that's something which should be integral, because there's rumours, like we said earlier, of Gabriel leaving, rumours of maybe Tierney going as well. But if we don't end up getting any players in, and we've got Timber out and Zinchenko's not always fit, then you know you're looking at a left side of Zinchenko, who's sometimes in and out of the team, and Tomiyasu, who, well, he's also quite injury prone, and then Tierney that might be going. So we've really got to make sure we don't go from having too much cover on that side to no cover on that side, because we really would be shooting ourselves in the foot. And yeah, it's interesting what you're saying about his ACL injury, and how it used to be a career-ending injury, didn't it? But nowadays, with all your cryogenic freezes and rehabs that footballers get, they get surgery pretty much straight away, don't they, and rehab pretty quick. So hopefully, I think we saw, was it Van Dijk who tore his ACL, and then he was back on the pitch within 7 or 8 months, wasn't he? So it's you're never really quite the same player, I always feel like. I don't think I've ever seen a player that's torn their ACL and then they're exactly as they were beforehand, which for a player that's that young, it might be quite worrying. But, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see, and hopefully he recovers well.
Yeah. What I would add with regards to outgoings as well is players like Balogun, for example, they, you know, are looking like they're going to be going out the door. They're probably going to bring in a big enough fee. I think we're demanding 50 million for a player that, let's face it, wouldn't really get any or many minutes in this team. So if we can sell players of that ilk, Tavares as well, for example, you know, it's looking like that we could get a tidy sum for him. Even like Holden, for example, he's probably not going to get any minutes in this team, even with the injury to Timber. That frees up another spot. And for me, even with the injury to Timber, I would still sell Tierney if a good enough offer came in, because I've been deliberating about this over and over again, but he just doesn't suit our system, to be honest. And he's tried to make it work, and Arteta clearly doesn't see it. He's not got in the matchday squad this season yet, which sort of shows how far down the pecking order he is. I think we've got Zinchenko, Tomiyasu and Kivior all ahead of him in the pecking order for that left-hand side. So I don't think selling him would really affect it too much, to be honest. But then, like you said, Tomiyasu's pretty injury-prone as well, so it's a tough one. But I think if we can generate enough income from these outgoings, how long have we got left of the window? Sort of 11, 12 days?
Yeah.
Something like that. So if we can get some of these players out the door and allow ourselves to find that right player or players, then I think we'll do it. But it has to be the right person. I don't think they'll go in the market if it's not going to be the right person.
Yeah, and also from what we've seen with the David Raya deal, the loan deal for him coming in, is that we're going to have to try and offset some of this FFP as well, because we've had a lot of net spends over the last couple of seasons, but we haven't had too many departures with much monetary value. So, you know, if we can sell some of these players like Tierney for a healthy fee, Balogun as well, like you said, then that's all money that we're going to be able to put back into the pot for future signings. And like David Raya, for example, we'll be able to sign him on a permanent basis as well. I saw that there were rumours of Balogun being linked to Spurs. Now, I don't know if you've heard these rumours or not, but apparently they were interested in signing Balogun around that 40, 50 million pound mark. Now, I don't know how I feel about this one, because it would really have the feel that he could come round and bite his back in the arse, basically, if he becomes really, really good and is like the next Harry Kane and haunts us for the next decade. But is that something that you would accept if they were to put the money on the table and offer, say, 50 mil for him?
For 50 mil. If we're selling to Tottenham, then you then you add tax on it at the end of the day. And also, you cover yourself with a buyback clause because, you know, imagine if they'd have sold us Harry Kane when he was young and he turned into the amazing player at Arsenal. It would, it's just, I can't bear thinking about it, to be honest. So I don't see that happening, to be honest. He's been linked with every man and his dog, hasn't he, to be honest? He's Monaco, Inter Milan, Fulham have been mentioned recently. Chelsea have even been mentioned. So it's an interesting one. I do hope it is abroad. I would rather see him in another league. And then we're more likely to get that buyback clause or maybe a sell-on clause or something like that. But it's an interesting one. And yeah, it's certainly going to be a big couple of weeks for the transfer window.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, it's quite funny as well if Chelsea did end up going for Balogun because of the amount of money that they've spent on players. And for him to make that switch and follow in the footsteps of someone like Mario Hutchinson, who's now just gone to Ipswich Town, which is absolutely hilarious because he's moved to Chelsea for that first team pathway, which he couldn't find at Arsenal for some reason, even though, you know, like we're seeing now, we don't really have anyone on that right-hand side that can fill in when Saka's not there, apart from maybe Reece Nelson, who's a bit part player at best anyway. So, you know, I don't think that's the right move for him, but if we can cash in on him, then I'd be absolutely all for it. Something else I was just going to add as well, not really related to today's game, but I don't know if you've caught the Jack Wilshere's under 18s. He does a documentary on it. I think it's on YouTube at the minute, and it's really, really interesting to see all the ins and outs of it. And I think it's the Youth Cup that they played where they got to the final and unfortunately they got battered in the final. But you can see that there's so many decent youth prospects in that team, like Ethan Wanyeri that we saw who made his debut for the first team last season, and also Mario Kosi Adubri, who looks like a little mini Saka, doesn't he, on that right-hand side. He looks absolutely quality. Now, how do you think we're going to be able to integrate these players into the team going forward? Do you think we're going to be able to bring them in whilst we have so many competitions that we're going to be asking for a lot of our players in?
Well, that's always the golden question, really, isn't it? And it does take a very big talent like Saka to come along and, you know, to break into that first team. And it also takes a bit of luck because Saka wouldn't have got into this team if it wasn't for the fact that we weren't performing that well at the time of his emergence. He was sort of slotted in at left back or left wing back at the time. Then Pepe was really underperforming, so he got his chance out there. And then, the luck sort of helped Saka. And sometimes that's all it takes. You just need a little bit of something like that to happen for someone to be given their chance. But we certainly do have a lot of big prospects. Miles Lewis-Skelly as well in that documentary looked immense. His ball carrying was instrumental in that cup run. And I can see him being a big part of the Arsenal first team one day as well. But look, if they don't get their chance in the Arsenal team, then there is always a loan option. And I know that's sometimes frowned upon, but some of the best and biggest players in the world have had loans. You know, it doesn't always have to be a negative thing. I think Arteta is very clever in the fact that he lays out a pathway to the first team, and I think that's one of the biggest reasons why we were able to convince Ethan Wanyeri to sign his pro deal at Arsenal and not at the other clubs that were sniffing around like Man City and Chelsea, which were offering him a lot more money. but we were able to show him that pathway to the first team. And ultimately, we're going to be the one that reap the rewards in a couple of years' time when he does hit the heights of where he's inevitably going to be, because he does look like some player. I think he scored a hat-trick the other day in the under-21s, and he's a 16-year-old boy. So, you know, I think Arteta, Wilshere, Mertesacker have really got a good partnership there, and it does seem like there will be another set of stars coming through. And also young Charlie Patino as well. He's taken the loan route, and it was looking like he was destined to leave the club this summer, but it looks like he's been convinced to go out on loan again, because there may be a pathway to the first team with just one more year's experience. So, you know, Swansea, where he's gone, is a good team, a solid championship team, and he's already performing there. I think he's scored an assist on his debut. Got an assist, sorry. So, you know, I think, who knows, he could come back and really start challenging for places, because, you know, we will have some players leaving in the summer. You know, Jorginho's contract expires. Elneny's contract expires. Who knows what's happening with Lokonga? There are sort of players on the periphery that will be leaving in central midfield, so that there will be gaps.
Yeah, for certain. And it's just that balancing act, isn't it, between being able to integrate new players, youth players, into the first 11 and not weakening your squad too much so that you're not competitive in these big games. But I think that's something which we're going to be able to use maybe the Carabao Cup in the earlier fixtures for, you know, get maybe 3, 4, 5 different youth players in there and mix them up with some of the more experienced players, and then help them actually achieve that stepping stone to be getting into maybe just on the bench or being able to get featured into a Premier League match day squad. Because ultimately, if you don't play, you never get given your chances, then you're not going to see these diamonds in the rough like we had with Bukayo Saka, and we've seen Nketiah's coming through, Smith Rowe came through, and you've just got to give them their chances, haven't you, really? But yeah, I just wanted to touch on that as well.
Yeah, is there anything else that you want to bring up, or that we may have missed from today's game?
I can't really think of anything. I feel like I've not had the opportunity to laugh at Chelsea yet, because we've not done a podcast since then. So I just want to make an honourable mention to them getting absolutely battered by West Ham.
Okay, we'll end it on that delightful little note. I think we've got another London derby up next, and that is against Fulham. Saturday this time. We haven't got to wait all the way till Monday. So join us again for that one. And until next time, take care.
You're listening to the Arsenal Ramble.